So much is unsaid, so much is unseen, so much is buried in the events before the events of the play that you'll never see.
Welcome, 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 welcome! Exciting day here on No Script, an unscripted conversation about theater's best scripts. I'm Jacob, that's Jackson, and we are jazzed, which is a word no one's used in 25 years, to be here for themed month, everybody!
Yeah, themed month, it's finally here. This season in particular, it's exciting to... any season we do themed month, it's always exciting because it's a chance to talk about kind of a consistent theme of scripts and kind of have interwoven conversations across all of the episodes in the themed month. So it's exciting to get to jump into that. But it's also exciting this particular themed month because we're getting to engage a type of play and a type of theater that we don't really ever get to engage on the show because this themed month we're doing mini month, all 10-minute plays over the course of these next 4 weeks.
That's right. We come back to the short play for mini month. It's been our most common sort of structure or theme for themed month because there's just so many spectacularly good short plays out there. And the format of the podcast is that we talk about full-length plays because those are much more commonly produced. And that's just sort of what we do. And so we wanted an opportunity to talk about short plays. And so theme month is a great time to do that. So this is our third time, I think, coming back to short plays as the sort of general, but as you say, we're not just doing short plays, we're doing a format that's near and dear to my heart for many reasons, 10-minute plays. We were in school together, Jackson, many a year ago. I won't say how many years ago because it'll scare you. It has its own word. It's not just a number of years. There's now a single word for that number of years, which is terrifying. But back then we were studying 10-minute plays. We were studying how to write them. We were directing them in directing class. And so even back then, this has been a quick sort of single completed action kind of format for plays. And then now I study with someone who's formerly of the Actors Theater of Louisville, a place where 10-minute plays really made a life, made a home for themselves. And so this is a format of play that I love, and it's so, so awesome to do this themed month about them.
Yes, yes, I agree. There's something so interesting, so alive. There's so many unanswered questions in a 10-minute play that it's great fun to get to dig into, both as an audience, getting to kind of see it and then wonder afterwards what's going on, but also as actors and as directors, as the tech team, you get to ask a lot of fun questions and make up a lot of stuff in terms of like subtext and background and things like that. So it's exciting to get to turn to it, and we're kicking it off with a script that is near and dear to us. This particular script, Cover, is a play that we did during our time in college. I believe, I was trying to remember if this is correct, Jacob, but I think it's the first time that you directed me in something. Is that accurate?
I think that is correct. I'd have to go back and check the annals, but think that is right. Cover by Jeffrey Sweet. Jeff Sweet is friend of the show, and personal mentor to me, and one of the people who influenced how I think about playwriting and scripts, and you as well, Jackson, and friend and mentor to our one of our more specific mentor. All that to say, we love Jeff Sweet, love doing his stuff on the podcast. We've been back a number of times. And Cover was an easy choice because of this shared work that we did on it, again, a number of years ago that has its own word.
Yes. It's a decade, okay? The word is a decade.
This was the unsaid word. It's one of Jeff Sweet's most basic playwriting techniques, the unsaid word.
Yes. So yeah, it's exciting to get to come back to this script after all that time. There's certainly still lines of it banging around in my head as I read it again.
I also did like scenes from this play for like ACTF Irene Ryan competition.
Yeah,
those years
yep.
ago, it was a popular go-round for that, at least in our school.
Yeah, it's a great script for that. Exciting to get to turn to it as the first one of this themed month. So exciting to jump into that. Before we do, especially during these themed months, we just want to say thank you to all of our patrons at patreon.com/NoScriptPodcast for being a part of the No Script community. Y'all rock. Thank you all so much for being a part of the show. If you're looking for a way to help out the show, whether you're just jumping into it with the themed month, or if you've been a longtime listener for a long time, you can head on over to patreon.com/NoScriptPodcast. Find a number of different tiers of membership over there, patronship over there. The lowest one being just $1 a month, $12 over the course of the year. So definitely check that out if you're looking for a way to help out the show. It's a great way. It's also a great way just to get involved in the community because, like, they got access to the scripts of a themed month ahead of time. So if you're looking for a way to be a part of NoScript or help out the show, we'll see you over at patreon.com/NoScriptPodcast.
And now, back to the script.
Here we go.
So we're not going to do a context section for many, many months across the course of this year. We have done that for our short play episodes in the past because these are going to be short episodes to sort of match form and content. We're just going to do a sort of a spin through each conversation, keep them nice and tight. So no context section. That means I turn it back over to you, Jackson, for the synopsis.
Yes. All right. So we're jumping into the quick synopsis of this play. This particular play centers around three friends, it's hard to say there's only two relationships because there's really like almost four somehow in this play. But it's between the characters Marty, Frank, and Diane. Now, Marty and Diane are married, and Frank is their friend. Longtime friend. These people have been friends for a very long time. There's some definitely a closeness between all of them. But the action of the play reveals that there's also been some distance as well. Marty shows up and like comes into Frank's office. Frank is up in this kind of like high rise place, probably somewhere in New York. They talk about seeing New Jersey out of the window and stuff like that. And Marty's kind of admiring it for the first time, it seems like, first time he's been there in a while, and it's clear that eventually Diane is gonna show up, and they're gonna go out to dinner and a movie and hang out for the night. Now, in the course of their conversation, Marty lets kind of slip into the conversation. By the way, if it's at all possible, let's try to insinuate that I was with you over the last night. And Frank's like, what's going on with that? Why am I insinuating that you weren't with me over the last night, the first time I've seen you in a while? And Marty's just like, it's fine. It'll just be best for everyone if we just say that's what we've been doing for the last 24 hours. And so through Frank's kind of consistent questioning of Marty, we discover that Marty was out last night and Diane doesn't necessarily know where he was, that he was out with someone else, and that someone else was likely someone that he had some sort of relationship with. And he continues kind of progresses down the line of asking Frank to lie for him. Frank tries to say no for a long time. There's a lot of back and forth, some very quick phrased back and forth between them. Eventually, it culminates into Frank saying, I'm not going to lie for you, but I'm not going to tell her who it is because I don't even know. Marty gets around this by telling him who it is, and so that now he knows, and through a kind of a culpability says, okay, now you have to, and you might as well just keep lying for me because either you have to tell her outright or you have to lie for me, one way or another. Eventually, Diane shows up, and we... Diane is the first time she's been in the space as well. She greets Frank. There's some closeness between them as well. Again, there's some kind of subtext that we might get into a little bit. Some room for decision about how close Diane and Frank are. Shows around the office. They kind of progress into we're going to be heading out to dinner. Frank steps out of the room to get ready, and Marty and Diane are left in the room. She asks him where he's been. Eventually, it kind of becomes clear there's some distance between them as well. Diane is kind of physically distant from Marty, and Marty continues to basically lie slash omit where he's been. Frank comes back into the room. She asks if it's correct whether or not whether Frank and Marty have been hanging out, and Frank caves and lies. Even though when he does, it's clear that Diane knows exactly that he's lied. And so there's kind of a tense leaving that happens where everyone knows that everyone is lying to everyone and that things are not as they should be, but they all leave together to head out to their dinner reservation. There you go. That's the quick flyby of Cover by Jeffrey Sweet.
Yeah, one of the things that's so great about Cover, I use Cover a lot because it has a nice simplicity as a 10-minute play. There's a problem presented, and the characters go around about the single problem, and then there's a nice sort of alteration of that problem in the end when Diane comes in, and it is not resolved in terms of the character's relationship being fixed. Obviously, that is not how the play ends. But the action, the question of the play, is resolved in this 10 minutes really nicely. Will or will not Frank lie? And the answer to that question is yes. Of course he will. He does at the end of the play. And so it's sort of a nice format, a nice glimpse at a sort of basic layout of this very quick little look. A 10-minute play is just this sort of brief window into it. But famously, this script was developed through improv. Jeff Sweet talks a lot about using improv as the kind of fodder, the material through which to create a drama. And this script came out of that. And this script feels like it came out of improv to me.
Yeah, there is there's especially a number of scenes where there's this like back and forth of very similar lines, like I won't, you will, I won't, you will, or something along those lines of like this really like fast back and forth that like builds and builds and builds, and it definitely has that sort of like we're in a groove, we're improvising together, sort of like mining for information, but vamping off of each other at the same time, sort of feel that makes it feel very alive and very a connected character wise in this sort of live way.
Yeah, there's the whole exchange in the middle where Marty, of course, is pressuring Frank to lie for him, and Frank says, "I can't." And Marty says, "Well, no, actually what you're saying is that you won't." And they go around for maybe a page and a half, maybe a little less than that, just around the words can't and won't. Can't means won't, won't means can't, blah, 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 blah. And they negotiate those specific language choices of the character in this that feels like that is such great, and I don't know, I don't have access to the original improv recordings or transcripts or anything, but those kinds of exchanges feel like they really do come out of the mouths of a real person in a moment trying to convince someone to lie for them. The words can't and won't become high-stakes words to choose.
Yeah. So like the negotiation piece becomes this sort of like whether or not Frank will choose a side, right? Like that's like a lot of what the early part of the play the middle part of this short play is like Marty saying, "We're friends, right? You'll lie for me, right?" And Frank's going like, I mean, yeah, we're friends, but like Diane's my friend too. I'm not friends with Diane because of you." And so like fun things like that are all great ways to work on the backstory and the subtext of things and what's going on with these characters from before, because there is this sort of like almost antagonism between Marty and Frank initially with the way they show up to each other in that early part of the play.
Yeah, and even in a 10-minute play, it's hard. You don't want to jump right into the most intense moment of the conversation. And so ramping up across the course of this play from, friendly request to mildly frustrating conversation to the point where the friendship seems at stake is the journey that you go on. And it, of course, it was always at stake from the moment that Marty comes in and says, "You should lie to my wife, your friend, my wife, not just my partner and your friend because you're my friend, but or this shared friendship, lie about something that," you know, he says early on, it's a white lie, but that argument doesn't seem to hold much water, and in the play it's very quickly moved past because he was with another woman the night before.
Yeah.
Now, we don't know what "with" means exactly. It's not quite clear whether he slept with her, whether he was just flirting, whether they were on a specifically organized date. We don't really know exactly what happened. But what's clear is that from the moment Marty says, "Hey, by the way, I have this favor to ask," something is going to be irrevocably changed. And so part of the audience experience of this play that's so heartbreaking is watching Frank try to hold on to, like, wanting to go back to before this question was asked.
Yeah.
And knowing that is just impossible. I mean, and Jackson, you're my dearest friend, but if you were like, hey, I was with somebody else, can you lie to my wife? Or maybe like, our friendship is different now. No matter what happens from this point forward, something's different.
Right. Things
also,
have
if she's listening, I wouldn't do it.
Right. Yeah. No, the way that Marty kind of rolls into the room kind of has this sort of like, at any time Frank tries to throw up, I'm not going to do it. There's like this kind of consistent push, consistent bullying. Each reason is undermined really well. and that's part of why this play is just written so well. Each time Frank manages to find a way to say no without saying, and also you're not my friend. Marty finds a way to be like, oh, well, that no doesn't matter anymore because now this reveal of information happens and this reveal of information happens all the way to the very end where he finally, like, the last stand of Frank is, okay, I just won't say anything and I can't reveal your secret because I don't know who it is. So as long as I don't know who it is, and right away Marty's like, it's this person. So this, like, kind of, like, slow breaking apart of the argument by revealing more information is such a like fun and also like nefarious bullying sort of way that Marty undermines Frank's best attempts to return to what was before.
I think the moment where Marty actually forces Frank to lie, right? So Diane comes in. There's some honestly sort of odd little scenes within this play, like Frank leaves and Marty and Diane talk about like work for like half a page, and it seems like something is going on, but we're not quite sure what is going on, and it's not clear, but it all comes down to this moment where Diane says, you know, I wasn't going to ask this. I told myself I wasn't going to ask this, but I'm going to ask this. Where were you last night? And Marty just turns and says, I was with Frank, right? So he forces the issue. This issue that they spent 7 pages, you know, 7 minutes of a 10-minute play negotiating like every minuscule part of the action of lying, the morality of lying, the word choice of lying, the practicality of lying. They've negotiated every little bit of it. They've decided on a course of action. And then Marty just immediately flips that on its head and forces Frank in the moment to pick a side. And it feels genuinely surprising. It's one of the most like bold steps I see a character take in a drama. That's why I love this play so much, is in large part because of that choice made by Marty. A nefarious choice and an awful choice. I'm not celebrating the choice, but I'm celebrating the writing behind the choice.
Right, right.
That's what makes this play so dramatic, is that big choice that he makes. But in hindsight, you've seen that coming all along, because as you say, him spilling all of the details of the night before to Frank, here's where I was, here's who I was with, means that Frank is now forced to make a decision anyway. Because if he's not going to tell her this stuff that he knows, that's a decision. And so it's one of those things that when he finally forces Frank to lie, it's like sort of a shock in the moment. And then at the end, you look back and you're like, that's just who that person is.
Yeah, just taking big wild leaps and trusting that somehow he'll land on his feet each time. And at least in the context of this play, he does. And yet there is something else that happens in this scene. This play is a challenging play for the actor playing Diane, because there's in comparison to the other actors in this play, there's only like 3 pages with Diane in it. And she kind of comes in and has to like do a lot of work with subtext, a lot of work with lines that aren't talking about the thing she's talking about, as opposed to Marty and Frank, who like just straight up talk about the thing they're talking about. Will like the whole bit around like can or won't. It's just like obvious what they're talking about. But there's this last scene, the last part of this play in particular, how Diane knows the stage direction is just that. So Frank says, after he's lied for Marty and said that he was over playing poker last night, Frank says, tell you what, dinner's on me tonight, okay? And the stage direction for Diane is, she knows they've been lying now. She looks at Frank very directly and says, "Why not? A beat." So there's a lot of subtext going on for Diane, and a lot of subtext going on for everyone in this scene. That once Diane shows up, how much one person knows that the other person knows what the other person knows is all sort of up in the air, and the degree to which everyone is aware of how much everyone has lied to everyone is so tense. And almost tangible by the end of that scene.
Yeah, it is, but it is unspoken. And yes. This is, I think, Jeff Sweet showing off his writing chops, which he, among lots of great playwrights, does really well. Because this is a play that is, I mean, suitcase jammed full of words. Yeah. This play is words, words, words. Marty and Frank spin around and around again about every word in the sentence, "Will you lie for me?" They go around and they talk so much. I mean, it's a 10-minute play, but I guess you were in it. It feels like it's a challenge to memorize. It almost feels repetitive and nonsensical at times, how minutely they deal with the words. And then the moment that decides the story of the play has no words in it at all.
Mm-hmm.
The character realizes something that no one says out loud, and then nobody says out loud what that means for this relationship or each other. And it's such a great show of variance. Even in a 10-minute play, these short little thing, you use two I mean, there's obviously many techniques at play, but these two sort of counterbalancing techniques. If you're going to put words, 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 words in the vast majority of the play, then in the pivotal moment, take them all away. No words for this moment. And that's what makes it so dramatic. I mean, if it had just been a long spewing words monologue from Diane when she discovers it, there's no variance in the pace or the feel to tell us this is the thing that this was all leading to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, down to the very last thing we see before the lights fade is Frank and Marty exchanging a look. Like the whole thing is summed up in like three looks.
Yeah. What does that look mean? What do they know she knows?
Right.
Are they truly gonna all go out to dinner in the museum or whatever now?
it's gonna be a rough night after this.
Well, it you don't know, and it's unsaid. And a 10-minute play, just by virtue of its shortness, much is going to be unsaid. For example, when we worked on this play, in part because I knew that this play had been developed from improv, I figured why not rehearse it through improv? So we did a huge amount of improv for our rehearsals. And we really packed and filled out the backstory of the characters. Why are they all friends? Like, what does that mean? When Frank says, I'm friends with Diane, not just because I'm friends with you, we're all friends. What does that mean? How did they meet? Why are they all friends? Does Frank have a partner? Is this partner also part of the friend group? How long have they been friends? What is the nature of this friendship? You don't know. I mean, it's just not in the script.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I remember. Yeah. All that work we did like great kind of tie lines to past sorts of things. There are like hints in the script. Like as soon as Diane shows up, Diane kind of remarks on the room, and then they like share it. Like Frank says, "Don't I get a kiss?" or something like that. And so there is like, I mean, it's
clearly,
like a dated,
really good, like, friends, yeah,
yeah, very good friends. So there is like a closeness, and you have to justify these little hints that you get. But yeah, so much is unsaid, so much is unseen, so much is buried in the events before the events of the play that you'll never see. So it was definitely fun to get to play in the improv space, but then also it really affected, like we made some distinct choices at the end of this play as to what people knew.
Yes.
To what degree the friendship has been shattered as a result of this interaction. And it's fun. It'd be fun to see it again and see what someone else does with it.
No, I totally agree, and I've used it in various acting classes and sort of seeing the different discoveries, and it's because the first part of the play, they're so explicit about what they mean, and what exactly they mean by each word is so strongly negotiated. There is so much room then to use subtext in the back half of the play with Diane. And it's all subtext. I mean, nobody says a stinking thing in the Diane scene. There's like four lines where characters actually say, like, and I mean, this is a compliment, like a relevant thing, right? It's Diane, yeah. Like, I decided to ask, where were you? Where were you? And then Marty says, I was with Frank. And then Frank says, yes, he was. And those are the only four lines where anybody's actually talking about the issue at hand. The rest of the four pages are talking about other stuff, just other stuff in their life. And so what you find is that they're no longer able to speak so explicitly, because there's the secret. And so subtext becomes the magnificent sort of crowning jewel of this play at the end. And there's so much there. And it can be heartbreaking. It can be dreadful. It can be scary. It can be angering. It can be whatever.
Or just sad.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So much. Even from the beginning of the play, you get so much subtext right out of the bat. The fact that Marty doesn't know the office and doesn't really know what Frank is doing also speaks into it. So there's all sorts of... The play is just stock full, as you already said, stock full of lines, but also stock full of subtext. So many different parts and elements of this script that make it great for a centerpiece of a one act sort of night, or just, you know, trying to, like, I would come out and see this play all on its own, honestly, if it was paired with dinner, certainly. So yeah, it's a great show.
Yeah, well, I think that's all the time we have for this conversation, in an effort to keep our 10-minute play conversation short. Cover by Jeffrey Sweet, just a remarkable little piece of human drama, a nice naturalistic unity of time, place kind of piece. We're going to look at some very different kinds of pieces across 10-minute plays, which, because they are short, there is a lot of risk allowed for in a 10-minute play, and we are going to look at some risk, this is a drama, we'll look at other kinds of things too, but for a 10-minute human psychological realism drama, to me, Cover is up there with one of the most stirring, heartbreaking, subtext acting challenge kinds of pieces of work, and I just love it for that reason.
If you have been in Cover, if you've read it, if you've seen it, and are looking for conversation partners around it, we'd love to be those people for you. We'd love to keep chatting about this particular play, as well as all of the plays in this themed month. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, or X at the username at NoScriptPodcast. We also have a Gmail, NoScriptPodcast@gmail.com. Find us on any of those sites. We'd love to keep talking about Cover or any of the other plays of themed month with you.
If you liked this episode, if you're looking forward to more of Theme Month, or liked any of the rest of the season, or are now almost 12 seasons of this show, recommend us to your friends, family, anybody you know that likes theater, reading, storytelling, conversations about structure, authorial intent, and all that kind of great stuff. Send them our way. They can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, YouTube, all those kinds of places. Like our Facebook page, where a link to the episode, new episode, appears every Monday when we publish. Until next week...
until next week, I'm Jackson, and that's Jacob. Thanks for listening to No Script, the podcast.
Bye.